Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. this Wednesday, the 14th of February. Yes, it is Valentine's Day. Coming off that conversation with Pastor Will Whedon on the real Valentine, what the real point of Valentine's life was, not hearts and flowers and X's and O's and chocolate and candy and whatever else. Oh, flowers. Oh, I mentioned flowers, didn't I? Didn't have much to do with flowers. But he did have a lot to do with making the clear confession of Christ before the world, even unto death. Puts me in mind of Christ Academy. They're young men who are thinking, I hope they really consider what they're getting themselves into. Think about that, a high school-aged man in your congregation who says, I think I'd like to be a pastor. One way to get his feet wet, but also to give him a realistic picture of what he might be facing, and I'm dead serious, no pun intended, maybe even martyrdom. Send him to Christ Academy this summer at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. They will not sugarcoat the prospect of the pastoral ministry for these young men. They won't tell them, oh, it's wonderful. It's an easy life of study and occasional preaching. No, they'll tell them in no uncertain terms that it might cost them their lives, but it's worth it. At Christ Academy 2007 this summer, it's June the 17th through the 30th. It's a two-week residential program for high school-aged men, and they get to study in the classroom, worship in the chapel, and spend time with the faculty there. For more information about Christ Academy, and if you know of a young man who you think would in the future make a faithful pastor, and if not, ask your pastor to recommend a young man from your congregation for Christ Academy, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155. Again, it's June the 17th through the 30th this summer, 1-800-481-2155. It's Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. This just catches your attention right off the bat. Karma, Zen, capitalism. We don't usually put those things together. Karma and Zen, yes, but karma and Zen with capitalism? What do you do when you've made a lot of money, become successful, risen to the very top of your profession? If you're out there in a good economy, business is great, booming. Yeah, you can go and get another MBA, couldn't you? But what if you're not happy? What if the money and the bonuses and all the other things that you get by way of good business aren't making it for you? Well, there are many who are now turning to Zen capitalism, Eastern religions, their philosophies, their theologies, to find personal business and family fulfillment. And those who take the courses and the seminars, they say it works. They say it's worth it. Here's the story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. I want to hear from you as we stop and start this piece on karma, Zen, capitalism, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org.
I would like you to give me a list of things that you need to get in order to be happy.
The answer to Professor Srikumar Rao's question would seem obvious. These are, after all, MBA students at the Columbia University Graduate School of Business. Some already have their Masters of Business Administration degrees and are working on Wall Street or in corporate America.
Laughter and a strong support structure.
I need hugs and sunshine.
None of this is necessary for you to be happy. None of it. Most of us function under the model, we have to get something in order to do something, in order to be something. If this happens, then I will be happy. And I'm suggesting to you that we live our entire lives based on that model, and that model is fundamentally flawed.
The answer, says Professor Rao, is that you can't get happiness. It's something inside you.
I don't think you need to get anything in order to be happy.
So that's the answer.
Oh, absolutely. Anything that you can get, you can lose.
Imagine discussing happiness in a business course 25 years ago when some were proclaiming greed was good. Professor Rao was a player during that high-flying era, a marketing consultant to several blue-chip companies.
I reached a point where I said there has to be something more.
When he found his answer in the teachings of Hinduism, he created a course called Creativity and Personal Mastery. It's an extremely popular course with 5 times more applicants than can be accepted.
Probably 90% or more of my students have already been out in the business world. They've worked at some of the largest corporations in the country. And they say, this is nice, and there is a lot of money, there is a lot of prestige, quote-unquote, there is career success. But there's something more that I'm looking for. I'm looking for fulfillment, and I haven't found it yet.
His is not the only course offering Eastern philosophy as a roadmap to personal fulfillment. Professors at the top 6 business schools are blending Hinduism and Buddhism into their classes.
One of the core concepts of the Gita, which is a very important scripture in Hinduism, is the notion that you have some control over your actions, but you have no control over the outcome. So if you make your happiness contingent upon a particular outcome, may or may not happen, frequently doesn't happen, and therefore you condemned yourself to living perpetually in frustration.
The class is so popular that would-be students are willing to go through Professor Rao's grueling acceptance process and pay an extra $1,000 tuition fee. They get no course credit, huge writing assignments, a 62-page syllabus, and the class meets all day on Sundays. The course is so well-liked, graduates even formed an alumni association. Stuart Glickman is a teaching assistant.
I took the course last year, and it really made an impact on me. It just made me a better husband, better dad, made me a better person at work, just to be more sensitive to people and really understand me better.
Is he talking about this course, or is he talking about Promise Keepers? It's hard to tell, isn't it? Well, look, it works, doesn't it? Here's a guy who, with his MBA, has everything that a man could want and still is unhappy and finds his answer in Zen capitalism. And it improved his life. How often have we heard from Christian pulpits, even sermons we review here on Issues, etc., that the essence of Christianity is we'll take your already pretty good life and make it just that little bit better? Get you over the edge. You're almost happy. You're almost joyful. You're almost this. Your life is almost as good as it can be. We'll just push it over the edge just a little bit better. Which is, by the way, not the message of Christianity. We hear Christian preachers say things like, I'm addicted to change lives, improved lives. Christianity doesn't have a lot to do with improving your life or making you a better father or husband or businessman, for that matter. I seem to remember the first disciples having to give up their businesses to do the business of the church. But if self-improvement, or whatever kind of improvement you're looking for, is the standard of whether or not something is worth considering, this would qualify. It certainly would. Here's a little bit more from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on Karma Zen Capitalism.
The professor emphasizes the value of expressing gratitude and appreciation.
Whenever you're feeling grateful, you're not feeling frustrated and angry and all of those negative states that we go into, and that's a big benefit in and of itself.
Ainsley Hines is an MBA student.
It's had immense impact on me in so many different sort of realms. Personally, it's reinforced a lot of what my parents taught me as a young person, but which I never believed.
If you're a CEO and immediate happiness and fulfillment are your goals, Marsha Goldsmith is your man, providing you can afford him.
Everybody I work with is mega successful, yet they want to get better. The behavior that led to the success they have is not necessarily the same behavior that's going to lead them to get better. Go, 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 go.
His job description is executive coach, and he's earned almost 9 million frequent flyer miles traveling and speaking, mostly to executives and CEOs of major corporations. Goldsmith's mantra is, be happy now.
Now, this is interesting. Okay. If you watch this guy, you guys didn't get to see the video, but we're just playing the audio for you. I'm thinking to myself, the message, the mannerism, it's all Joel Osteen. He even has his mantra, be happy now. Or, if you're Joel Osteen, your best life now. Look, anybody could tell you, this guy is an advocate of Buddhism. And he's there telling CEOs, what a profound teaching. What made you successful isn't going to be what keeps you happy. I think most people learn that lesson by about age 11. The CEOs pay big bucks for it. For that matter, many Christians will shell out $9.50 for a book that essentially says, well, if you really want to be happy, you need to be a better person. Here's how to be a better person. I wouldn't be surprised if this guy hasn't even spoken to some church organizations. Wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, the kind of churches that have had their success and they realize they're still not happy. They got their big numbers and they're still not happy. They got everything. Maybe there's more. In fact, I heard an interview recently with Bill Hybels who talked about his past success, and now that that star is kind of going below the horizon, he's looking for something new. He thinks things have changed. There's got to be another new, different approach than they've been using for all these years. Oh, by the way, no surprise, his new approach involves preaching the gospel even less than the old approach. It's Audio Open Lines, Issues, Etc. this Valentine's Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. If you care to react to Karma Zen Capitalism, hey, if it works, we've been told for years that if it works in business, it'll work in the church. So what's wrong with this? These guys are only mildly Buddhist. They're only mildly Hindu. They don't bring a lot of their own stuff in there. They just are teaching us how to be more successful at what we already are successful at, right? So if it works in business, why shouldn't it work in the church? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
When I work with my clients, I say now everything else is what's called feed forward, not feedback. Feed forward is a very Buddhist concept. We're not going to talk about the past. Past is over. Basic Buddhist philosophy, every time I take a breath, it's a new me. I believe people can change.
His fees are said to be substantial, but they come with a money-back satisfaction guarantee.
Do you help make them a better corporate citizen?
I think I help make them a better human being. A lot of people have the right values. Their behavior doesn't match their values. I just try to help their behavior match their values.
He gathers feedback from the executive's family and employees and then coaches his powerful clients to lead by example, to listen to those around them, how to apologize and be a decent person.
I could not help. No. Scroll back up there, Jeffy. I want to read this. He asked, do you think you may help make people better corporate citizens? Well, I help make them a better human being. A lot of people have the right values. Their behavior doesn't match their values. I just try to help their behavior match their values. What does that sound like to you? It's echoes of something that you should be very familiar with. What does it sound like to you? Huh?
Cedra, what's your name?
Oh, okay. Turn off his mic. He's doing his job. You know what it sounds like to me? Deeds, not creeds. It sounds to me like Rick Warren, who says the church knows what it believes. It just doesn't know what to do. It's got all its beliefs straight. It just needs to change its behavior. That's what it sounds like. Oh, people have the right values. They just need to change. They need to bring their behavior in line with their values. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. From Seward, Nebraska, here's Matt.
Oh, this is just amazing. It just tells you the old Adam wants what the old Adam wants, material wealth. And that's not enough for the old Adam. The old Adam must also be happy. And in order to be happy, then you have to realize all that material wealth you strove for wasn't going to make you happy. And ultimately, what we need is the old Adam to die. And these are laws or principles, and the old Adam still thinks if he tries hard enough and does hard enough, doggone it, he's going to get it done, and he's going to make himself happy. Just not going to happen.
That is a great insight, Seward, and Matt in Seward. And you know what? Sadly, many churches reinforce this idea that your old Adam is just fine if he's taught to behave better than he does. That your old Adam, the old man in you, can be rehabilitated and coached into decent citizenship. That all you really need is, didn't we hear Ed Young say this last week? All you really need Jesus to do for you is redecorate your life. Jesus as life coach, Jesus as interior decorator. The old Adam cannot be rehabilitated. He's only good for one thing, to be killed. He can't be improved. He can't be coached into civil behavior. He can't be made any less old Adam than he is. Chuck calls from his car. Hi, Chuck.
The concept that we know our values, but our behavior doesn't line up with our values, it just, that drives me nuts. I show my values by my behavior. So if I'm saying my value is one thing and I'm behaving like my value is another thing, guess what? My mouth is lying because the way that I behave tells you very clearly what my value is. Thanks.
Great. Smartest listeners in radio. No doubt about it. Thank you, Chuck. Right. What you do shows what you believe. I'll use Bill Hybels as an example again. He's all about we need to reach the unreached with the gospel. But when it actually comes down to it, he says, oh, but when you have that unchurched person in front of you, be careful. You might not want to speak the gospel to them. Now, one of these things is true and one is false. In fact, I wrote an article recently about this. What was the name of this article that I wrote? Things Christians say, but they shouldn't. And the whole point of the article was what Christians say not only shows what they really believe, but it also, in time, will shape what they believe. If the classic example is, if you worship like a Baptist, sooner or later, you'll be a Baptist. You might still call yourself a Lutheran or a Presbyterian, whatever, but if you worship like a Baptist, sooner or later, what you say will shape what you believe, and you will be a Baptist. And if you worship like a Baptist, you might want to stop and ask yourself, am I really a Baptist? Even though I say I'm something else. Because what you say is a pretty good demonstrator of what you actually believe. All right, let's see what Matt has to say. Calling from Florida. Thanks for waiting, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd. I got two words for you. Spiritual formation.
All right.
Yeah, that's all it is. Rod Rosenblatt has a thing that he likes to say. I'll embellish it on it just a little bit. He says, if this stuff that you're feeding me comes in and fails me, because there's nothing in me that can react to it in a positive way, then my prayer becomes, I can't seem to get formed. Is there a way for unformed? And yeah, there is a way for unformed, and his name is Christ. The whole point is there's nothing in us that will respond to this stuff in a positive way that's really going to make us happy.
Right. Substitute the word formed with the word improved.
Yeah. Spiritual formation or spiritual improvement.
Right. Those who want to improve you spiritually or claim that they can, that is ultimately the question. If there is nothing in me that can be improved, what's left for me? Is there a God out there for the person who is unimproved? Is there a savior out there for someone who can't improve?
Yes, there is.
Glad to hear it, Matt. Thank you for calling. Yes, there is. In fact, it's kind of a prerequisite. Jesus says he came into the world to save sinners. That's kind of another way of saying those who aren't improved and can't improve. Hey, look, this is the dividing line in Christianity. If Jesus is only there for those who can or do improve, he's no savior. He's a coach. A coach can only work with what he has, what's already there in the athlete, right? If you got a kid that's got no talent and no strength and no smarts out on the field, the coach can try all he wants, but he can only develop the potential that's already there in the athlete. Right? Now, if Jesus is just a coach, then all he really does for you is develop your inborn, inbred potential. But if, in fact, you have no potential, such a Jesus can't do you any good. Then you need not a coach, but a savior who saves those with no potential. Joe calls from his car. Hi, Joe. Joe, welcome. Are you there, Joe? All right, he's not. We'll get him back sooner or later. Let's go back to, do we have time here?
We can get a couple minutes.
Okay, we can get a couple minutes. Before we do that, here's an email from Kate in Japan. She writes this, isn't that the idea behind the so-called revivals? You need to line up your life with what you believe. It's like he's doing revivals for CEOs, just a different flavor. Yeah, I think so. Let's get a few more minutes of PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly's feature on Karma Zen Capitalism in before we go to this break.
Take a deeper breath. I want you to imagine that you are 95 years old. You're just getting ready to die. Tell all my clients, you may think these employees like you. When you're 95 years old, you look around your deathbed. Ain't no employees waving goodbye. You realize that friends and family matter. And the other one is, you have a dream, go for it.
From the classrooms to the executive suite to private homes like this one in Upper Saddle River, New Jersey, you will find people in the financial world searching for some sort of spiritual grounding. In the basement of this home of a Wall Street executive, we found Gautam Jain, an instructor of an ancient Hindu philosophy known as Vedanta, which offers a life strategy to improve productivity, reduce stress, and find true happiness.
Today's concept of enjoyment is getting away from work. Now, what Vedanta is all about is transferring your happiness to work. If you can't find happiness in your work, you'll never find it.
Most of those attending this little gathering are successful business executives and other professionals.
Do you have a control over your mind's obsession for success? That determines, first of all, whether you'll be peaceful. Second of all, whether you'll be successful.
Dr. Sharad Wagli is a psychiatrist who has been practicing for 32 years. He says Vedanta has enhanced his work.
A patient that had been with me for a number of years now asked me, reached in her pocketbook, took out some paper, and asked me if she could borrow a pen. And she started taking notes, and I said, what are you doing? And she said, what you're saying now makes more sense than anything you've said to me in the past 2 years.
Vedanta is not against possessions. It is against possessiveness towards your possessions. It is the attachment to your possession that destroys you.
And if you do, Jonathan Lewis runs a home mortgage.
All right, let's take a break here. When we come back from this break, we'll continue with Audio Open Lines, PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly's feature on Karma Zen Capitalism, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
For sinners only, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
During the 20th century, there was a fierce battle in most American church bodies over the authority of Scripture. Doubts were raised over the miracles in both the Old and New Testaments. One of those battles took place in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for February is titled, A Seminary in Crisis. This resource details the battle between liberals and conservatives on the Concordia Seminary faculty in the early 1970s. You can find out more about A Seminary in Crisis on our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. A Seminary in Crisis is written by Dr. Thomas Zimmerman, one of two surviving members of a fact-finding committee appointed by the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Dr. J.A. O. Preuss. A Seminary in Crisis, 1-800-325-3040, or our website, issuesetc.org.
Legless lizards, it's not proof of evolution.
Answers with Ken Ham.
president of the Apologetics Ministry of Answers in Genesis. Well, Ken, what do lizards without legs have to do with evolution?
Not long ago, evolutionary scientists released reports that some lizards in the Bahamas prove evolution. Lizards of this genus were released on some islands about 20 years ago. And when their descendants were examined, they had much shorter legs than the original lizards. The change was 2,000 times faster than evolutionists would have expected. But is it proof of evolution? Well, no new information was added to the lizard genes, which is what evolution requires. You see, the change was nothing more than the sorting of genetic information already there. And that's not evolution. Evolution requires new information. It's just another example of natural selection, which creationists believe in. When God created, he made kinds of animals. He built into their genes a vast amount of information which could produce many varieties within the kind. Consider the Great Dane and the tiny Dachshund. You don't see scientists using their leg length as proof of evolution. They're still dogs. Short legs aren't proof of evolution, but they make a lot of sense if you believe the Creator gave animals all the information in the beginning that they'd need in their new environments.
Evolutionists probably use dinosaurs more than any other topic to influence young people to accept evolution. For what the Bible teaches, go to our website, answersradio.com.
Christ Academy is a two-week residential program for high school-aged men on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Here's the director of Christ Academy, Brian Gurman.
The students at Christ Academy live in the dorms as a seminarian would. They study under the seminary professors, and they worship in Kramer Chapel. And it is literally taking the seminary experience and getting a good taste of it for those 2 weeks. And what they learn in the classroom, then they experience in Kramer Chapel, as that is really the center of the experience, just as it is throughout the academic year here on campus as well.
At Christ Academy, high school-aged men explore the possibility of someday becoming a pastor. Christ Academy takes place June the 17th through the 30th on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. Look for the Christ Academy logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, 1-800-481-2155.
On the next Focus on the Family, an interview with Kay Coles James.
When you're about to get married, you need somebody who will get in your face and ask you some tough questions and make you think through some difficult issues.
It's an eye-opening broadcast for anyone considering, preparing for, or totally immersed in the act of marriage. Straight talk to young couples next time on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Dr. Jeff Gibbs will be our guest here in the studio. We're going to talk about Matthew's 5th chapter, the 11 verses starting that chapter, usually called the Beatitudes. Robert Schuller says it's about the Be Happy Attitudes, about being happy. Not much distance between Robert Schuller and Zen capitalism, is there? I mean, if it's about being happy, and Schuller says that being happy is about self-improvement, realizing your own potential, yada, yada, yada. And Zen capitalism says it's about not being possessed by your possessions. And I learned this stuff before I was in junior high. The man who possesses little is little possessed, those kind of things. Does it really require some guru from the East to come at $1,000 a pop to teach this kind of stuff? But it works. It works. Here are the last few minutes of PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly's feature on Karma, Zen, Capitalism. Here's Jonathan Lewis. It works for him, too.
Jonathan Lewis runs a home mortgage company in Fairfield, New Jersey.
And I could tell you a number of very, very wealthy people back in the early 80s and late 70s who had tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, and they were seeing psychiatrists, drinking, and had problems with suicide and other things. So I don't think money or bonuses makes one happy.
Some of his employees might disagree with the money and bonus part, but Lewis says he's learned to serve others through the teaching of Vedanta, and he's convinced he's a better boss.
I want to improve my life and help people around me as best I can. In order to do that, I need to understand and learn to deal with more complex issues and help employees who are stressed and myself as well.
The host of this class, Sanjeev Sobti, offers a word of caution from someone on the front lines of corporate America.
regrettably, I think greed is still very much alive and well. And I think people are continuing to try to fill the lacuna that they feel in their lives with material wealth.
Living your life day to day and just doing your best and can have enormous repercussions in areas that we just don't understand. So, you know, we can all make a difference.
On that point, the student and the master agree.
MBA students at top business schools are going to reach positions of power in a relatively short time, and then their actions are going to have a tremendous impact on tens of thousands of persons in, you know, many, many, many different countries. So it's particularly important that they re-examine their values and notions of what makes the world work.
And now the world can wait and see if this philosophy of corporate responsibility and personal fulfillment actually trickles down. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Washington.
Well, they say they're better businessmen. They say that they're better bosses. They say that they're better husbands and fathers to their children. And it works. And in many sectors of the Christian church today, that is the touchstone of truth. If it works, it must be true. If it brings the desired result, then it must have some value. They used to just call that pragmatism. Now it's some sort of highfalutin philosophy that seems to drive the church. Do what works. Why not this? Serious question. Why not this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I want to hear from you on Zen capitalism. I mean, it's just the tiniest of toes dipped into the water of Eastern religions, taking the best from Hinduism or from Buddhism, applying it to one's life, and it shows obvious improvements. You have something you want to say?
That nice segue.
What?
You have something you want to say?
Well, I was getting ready to go on to the next thing. Then I heard you shuffling in there.
I want to go back to the guy that says, if you can't find happiness in your work, you'll never find it. Since when is like happiness, personal happiness? My dad drove the same route for UPS for over 40 years.
I've seen him too. He didn't look like a happy
man.
Yeah,
I don't think he was happy.
He was happy to retire.
But he was happy to do to feed his children. You know, we're so narcissistic. You know, we got to find personal happiness. And
oh yeah, well, I think you put it in terms of your dad. I always think of it in terms of my grandfather, who toiled and labored as a farmer and a stockman when it was really toil and labor. When before the combine, that kind of a story where it was you didn't just jump in and start it up. And he worked his tail off for the better part of 60 years, starting from when he was a very little boy. Now, the rewards were great. He tucked away a lot of money, but he never saw any of it himself. I mean, he never actually enjoyed much of it himself. But if you would have said, are you happy? He would have laughed in your face. Are you personally fulfilled, Farmer Wilkin? He would have probably chased you off his property with a pitchfork. He would have said, I have work to do. I have kids to feed. I have land to plow and seeds to plant. I think he understood better what it meant to serve his neighbor by way of his vocation than seeking personal fulfillment every moment he was out there wheat farming.
I think of my mom, my wife. I mean, gee, I can't wait to change that next diaper. It makes me happy. Nothing makes me happier than change a diaper. And if I'm not getting happiness...
But what does it mean?
I'm not going to change that diaper.
But what does it mean when the Christian church, who should have better solutions than this, better answers than this, is offering the same people nothing more than just personal fulfillment with Jesus, a little layer of Jesus spread on the back or the front of it? Jesus becomes your life coach, your means toward personal fulfillment.
Doesn't it kind of go against the principles of Buddhism, too, where you don't rely on externals, including a job, to make you happy?
But you got to remember... This isn't Buddhism. This is revised for our own purposes. We do the same thing to Jesus, by the way. We just revise him to our own purposes. What did my grandpa understand? He understood that serving in his station in life, whatever it was not about seeking his own personal fulfillment. By the way, I think he was a very fulfilled individual. But it wasn't because he was seeking it. Seeking to serve his neighbor. I think he would have put it this way. God made me a farmer. That's what I do. He didn't think it through any farther than that. And what he said is absolutely true. That's all he needed to know. He understood that God had put him at a station in life. And that station in life brought with it all sorts of duties and opportunities to serve his neighbor. And that's all he needed to know. Oh, by the way, I've written something on that a couple of years ago called Location. Was it called Location and Vocation? I always forget the titles of my articles. If you want to take a chance to read it, it might be up on our website, issuesetc.org. It might not. If it isn't, just email me, twilkin@kfuo.org. By the way, Wilkin is spelled, always has been and always will be spelled, W-I-L-K-E-N. No S, please.
Why is it nobody can get your name right? I mean, people that listen daily, Wilkins,
mm-hmm.
What other kind
regular guests do this all the time.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
You notice they do it with the title of the show?
Yeah.
Issues
and Answers.
Or Issues, etc.
Yeah.
I know guys who like have degrees in Latin who still say Issues, etc., which is...
What other names? What are Wilkins is S. What other...
I-N-I-N-S,
yeah,
E-N-S, whatever it may be. Sometimes it's Williams. Sometimes it's Tom. I'm an enigma. That's why it is. I'm an enigma. And when you're an enigma, people have a hard time grasping the reality that is you. 505-7850-1800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Next up on Audio Open Lines, here's a CBS News piece on Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney and his Mormonism.
Mitt Romney is far from a household name.
I declare my intention to run for president of the
United States. But his presidential bid has been years in the making. The political resume is impressive. A former Republican governor of the very Democratic Massachusetts, where he passed a universal health care plan. And the man credited with saving the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics, who is also telegenic. But there's a personal matter that could dog his campaign, his membership in the Mormon Church, something Romney tried to demystify today.
Country and every person on this great planet is a child of God. I believe that we're all sisters and brothers.
But to many Americans, the Mormon Church is an unknown, shrouded in secrecy and stereotype dating back more than a century, when Mormons were allowed to have multiple wives.
People don't know much about Mormonism. A lot of Christian conservatives don't like what they know, and this is going to be a mountain for him to climb.
A CBS News poll shows that most Americans don't know enough about the religion to have an opinion, yet more than two-thirds say they could vote for a qualified Mormon. Senator Orrin Hatch, a Romney friend and Mormon who once ran for president himself, says Romney fits the bill.
Here's a guy that his religion has made him what he is, perhaps. But he's gone way beyond that in doing what is right for his fellow men and women.
Romney is running to the right as a conservative Republican. He once supported abortion rights, but has now changed his mind.
I think as long as candidates are willing to say up front, you know, this is what I believe in, or this is why I've changed my mind on a certain issue, people will take them at face value.
And one more thing, Katie. Orrin Hatch isn't the only Mormon in Congress. There are 15, and that includes Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid.
All right, there's the story. And it is true that Mormons aren't neophytes to government. And Mitt Romney looks like, at least we are talking very early in the presidential contention, he looks like someone who might have some staying power. This question gets raised over and over again about his Mormonism. It is interesting that most Americans don't know enough about Mormonism to form an opinion, but two-thirds of them who were polled said that they wouldn't have problem in principle voting for a Mormon, not Romney himself, but a Mormon. What about you? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. You know, they said only Nixon could have gone to China. Maybe only a Mormon president could deal with that pesky polygamy problem that they've got over there near the Grand Canyon. I mean, he has some credibility to deal with it. Well, Sunday on ABC's This Week, Sam Donaldson interviewed Gary Bauer. Now, Gary Bauer is and has been a official and unofficial spokesman for Christian conservatives and conservative evangelicals and conservative voters in general. The big question that they were dealing with is the other candidates running on the Republican ticket, namely John McCain and several others, why they don't get traction with the traditional conservative voters. Here's the story.
Why are conservatives apparently finding so much trouble saying that John McCain is conservative enough for them?
Well, you know, Sam, it's a good question. The conservative movement has been looking for the heir to Ronald Reagan ever since Ronald Reagan left office. And they haven't been very successful in finding that individual yet. Senator McCain actually has a very good pro-life voting record, for example, on an issue which is of great concern to a lot of social conservatives. But you're absolutely right. Right now, the three front runners, Giuliani, Mitt Romney, and McCain, there's still a lot of conservatives that aren't happy with any of them and are looking for somebody else to emerge.
And do you think that's likely to happen, Gary?
I think it's tough. It's always tough for a candidate to come from way down in low single digits. It may be particularly tough this year because things, once again, are getting more and more front-loaded. And so you've got to bring in a lot of money and be competitive in a lot of states at once. But I still think, you know, right up until perhaps this fall, it might be possible for somebody either like Governor Huckabee or Senator Brownback to get traction, or maybe somebody to throw their hat in the ring that doesn't need any introduction, somebody like Newt Gingrich, all of which could certainly turn the competition upside down and make it a lot more unpredictable.
Let's talk just a moment about former Mayor Giuliani and about former Governor Mitt Romney. Both of them have the kind of record on social issues that is anathema to true conservatives, I take it. And yet both of them seem to be doing very well in the polls. So my question is, does electability stump issues here or not?
Certainly electability is a factor for some people. You know, there's this senator from New York, Hillary Clinton, and that's enough to make a lot of grown conservatives cry at the prospect of another conservative Clinton. So folks are looking for a winner. But, you know, I think another factor here, Sam, is that, believe it or not, a lot of people out around the country don't know the records on social issues of people like Mayor Giuliani and even Mitt Romney. Those of us that are sort of political junkies know more and more the details, but I think there's going to be a lot of hard-hitting ad campaigns that we'll see in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina as these primaries get going that may indeed sort of mix things up in the polls.
So how do you explain it? That's what I want to know. How do you explain the fact that even this early in the game, John McCain, who has, I guess you could probably say he's got like a 98% voting record with the pro-life, if you were ranking pro-life, he did have a very unfortunate stance he took on embryonic stem cell research, which is no small issue. But up until that point, 100% pro-life voting record. How is it that he is more or less shunned by conservative voters, while Rudolph Giuliani, at least in the last poll I looked at, he's pro-life. And he's never been pro-choice, and he's never been anything but pro-choice. And the same voters love him, would vote for him. How do you explain that? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesztc@kfuo.org. My only objection to McCain, of course, I don't know that much about him. My only objection to McCain has to do with the embryonic stem cell research vote or his stance that he took there. That's it. Other than that, I cannot for the life of me figure out why people would prefer Giuliani. The conservative pro-life voter would prefer Giuliani, pro-choice as he is, over McCain. Is there some skeleton that came out of the closet that I don't know about? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Steve is on the line. Hi, Steve.
I think I have an answer for your question about Senator McCain.
What is it?
Back in 2000, in I think it was a South Carolina primary, it got really, really nasty between Bush and McCain. And McCain made some, I wouldn't call them disparaging, but not kind remarks about, especially like Bob Jones University and some of the, on the more fundamentalist side down there, the Christian right. And towards that and their support towards Bush. And I think that's part of why they haven't forgiven him after 6 years.
So they do this, I mean, I understand the objection they might have there, Steve, but I cannot imagine that the average pro-life voter would rather have a pro-choice Giuliani just because McCain said something nasty about Bob Jones.
Right. Well, I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is the fact that McCain may be pro-life, but he's not. I don't think he's a winner. I think they'd rather have a winner than have someone who's right.
So they'd rather be insured of a victory than vote on the principle.
Right.
All right, thank you, Steve. I mean, I haven't seen anything that would indicate McCain couldn't get a victory.
You know, I told you about one of I have two criteria. It was a criteria or criterion?
If it's plural, it's criteria.
Criteria.
Yeah, kind of like issues, et cetera, is issues, et cetera, not issues, et cetera. Go ahead.
No, I've told you about this. Pro-life, obviously.
Uh-huh. That's your one.
That's
okay.
My one.
What's
my second other? Thing is, I want somebody that's come from a blue-collar background.
Why is that?
Because I don't think, I mean, it's the same thing that people say about Hollywood actors. They can't relate to reality. You know, they don't have real lives like average schmoes like you and me. And I think once you've come into a lot of money or you're used to having a lot of money and power, you can't relate to the average Joe. Like Ronald Reagan, he grew up poor. And I think that's why Reagan could speak to the average, you know, person out there, the average electorate.
So you want someone blue-collar roots, which is hard to find in Washington, D.C. anymore.
It's hard to find the Republican Party.
Well, in the Democratic Party, too, for that matter. But you want someone with blue-collar roots who's pro-life.
Yes.
All right. Does McCain have blue-collar roots?
I don't know.
He was the son of a senator, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's why he was in that hotel over there in Vietnam for so long. I think he's actually the son of a senator.
Really?
Yep. So
yeah.
You cross him off your list, baby.
Yeah.
Of course, I guess you could have. Could you have blue-collar roots and be the son of a senator? I don't know.
It's my theory that George W. Bush, why he has a problem relating to the American people.
What's your theory?
Because my theory is he grew up in a bubble. He lived a life of prestige and money. This is strictly my personal opinion.
All right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I'll give you an example. I grew up a blue-collar person. I can talk to people, blue-collar, white-collar, anything.
Yeah, but you're the master communicator.
I have friends, country club type people, who can't. They simply they can't carry on a conversation with average people. They feel awkward. And I think that's one of the reasons why Reagan was able to connect.
Well, I don't know if I buy your theory, but I will say this much. It really is obvious when someone who's grown up on the one side of the gated community is trying to act like he's relating to the person who grew up on the other side of the gated community. That's obvious. That's true. I mean, there's an authenticity. Any elected official, there's an authenticity that can't be faked on that issue. Well, we're talking about the life issue with regard to presidential politics. In Europe, in particular, in highly Roman Catholic Portugal, they are making what I find to be an inexplicable move in favor of abortion. We'll find out how that went. Here's the story.
Supporters of the referendum to decriminalize abortion celebrated as the results were broadcast. But this is not yet a victory. Although 59% of those who voted supported a change in the law, the voter turnout was too low to make the ballot binding. Now, the government which supports the move must persuade Portugal's parliament to revise the law. The Prime Minister, José Socrates, said that despite the low turnout, the outcome was clearly in favour of lifting the ban.
The law that we have to approve now should respect the referendum's decision. The voluntary interruption of pregnancy in the first 10 weeks, practiced because of women's choice in a legalised institution, will be no longer a crime in our country.
Strongly Catholic Portugal is one of the few European countries with severe restrictions on abortion. It's estimated some 23,000 backstreet abortions are carried out each year in Portugal, a statistic the Prime Minister has called his country's most shameful wound. Tom Metcalf, Reuters.
Well, I would think the most shameful wound for Portugal would be to, in the name of trying to stop backstreet abortions, making those said abortions legal. That's a more shameful wound than even something as terrible as backstreet abortions. That was the argument that was made 34 years ago in this country. In order to stop illegal abortions, let's make them legal. It's a logic that doesn't necessarily work with other stuff, does it? In order to stop illegal drug use, let's just make it all legal. Most people, except for the most libertarian among us, see the flaw in that problem. How about this one? In order to stop the illegal carrying of firearms by the average citizen, let's just make it legal for everyone to carry firearms anywhere and everywhere. And again, except for the most hard-nosed opponents of gun control, most people say that's probably not a good idea. It's the same logic, oddly enough, that works for the advocates of the sexual revolution. In order to stop kids from having unsafe sex, let's give them a way to have safe sex. Abstinence, that thing, that one option in the middle, is never even considered. Is there a way to stop dangerous backstreet abortions without making those abortions legal? It's not going to decrease the number of abortions. It may, in fact, make abortion safer, at least for the mother, but it's never safe for the baby, that's for sure. Whether it's backstreet or legal. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our weekly series with Deaconess Pam Nielsen on teaching a Sunday school lesson. Tomorrow's lesson, the Transfiguration. That falls nicely near Transfiguration Sunday. There's a reason for that. And we'll also talk with Dr. Jeff Gibbs about the Beatitudes. That's an hour you do not want to miss. Friday on the program, the imprecatory psalms, those psalms of curses and judgment. Dr. Reed Lessing, our guest for a couple hours. Then Sunday night on the program, that's live Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. We'll talk about the Quran with Dr. Adam Francisco of Concordia College in Bronxville, New York. Speaking of must-listen-to hours, the first hour today. When you get home tonight, if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and you will find a link. It's going to be posted there tomorrow morning. That's probably as quick as we can get it up. You have to listen to this first hour with Bridget Gabriel, who wrote this book, Because They Hate, on Islamic terrorism, what it really is. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.